from the twisted realm of science and the darkest pits of reason comes chilling tales of godlessness. Bear witness to the unfathomable terror that is the Good Atheist.
Welcome to the GoodAtheist.net podcast. My name is Jacob Forte.
And I'm Krissa Hendricks.
All right, for those of you that thought that I was either dead or missing or kidnapped by pirates, I'm happy to announce that we're back to regular scheduled podcasting with a little bit of a twist.
Yes, the twist is that we were kidnapped by pirates for a short period of time.
We're not going with that story. The twist was that we've been... The twist is that we've been somewhat in transit for a little while because... While many of you know that I've moved to Calgary, the problem with any city that you move into is you got to find a place that's not a shithole.
Yeah, pretty difficult. And in our price range.
It's so low. It's our price range. We got the price range of of homeless people. Yeah, let's just say that we are lucky where we are. Unfortunately, this, as a reminder, if you hear weird noises, bing-bongy noises or like... crazy train sounds or the like, we are actually in Calgary, downtown the city, beside what appears to be a massive train station where they just have offload a whole bunch of sulfur or who knows what, and right next to the Calgary Tower, which every fucking hour decides to chime in for no known reason.
Yep. So. Yep. I don't know why they decided that would be a good idea. Hey, let's have a Calgary Tower, and also, we can pretend it's like Big Ben. It can chime every hour on the hour with some stupid freaking song. That would be great. People will love that. That won't be totally horrible and distracting for people who live here.
Yeah, no, of course not. Anybody who has their windows facing this thing won't be perpetually bothered. So yeah, that in mind, we apologize for any noise thing, and we also apologize for any ambient noise.
Or echo.
Because this apartment is about as empty as it gets.
Oh my goodness, so empty. We have, okay, what do we have? So we moved in yesterday. And it took us maybe an hour to get the stuff up.
Mostly due to clothing.
It was one carload worth of stuff. One carload. We put in our friend's tiny sedan.
Yeah, Toyota Corolla. We managed to fit everything that we now live with, which includes fold-out chairs, which are cutting circulation to my legs, a blow-up mattress, which is quite possibly the worst thing you can sleep on.
Yeah, but it's better than nothing. We're very grateful to our friend, for the record, in case she's listening. Thank you for letting us borrow all this stuff, because otherwise we'd be sitting on the floor right now and sleeping on the floor.
You know what? It's a pretty carpeted floor. I'm thinking about sleeping on it tonight. Now, here's the good and bad news. The bad news is that I would love to have a bit of a longer show, including lots of topics that I've been saving up over the past month, because a lot of shit has happened.
Oh, yeah.
Since the month that I decided not to do podcasts, because we were just on the road. We were visiting Chris's family in Prince Albert,
Saskatchewan.
Now, for those of you that know what a Prince Albert is, you might find that kind of hilarious. Do you know what a Prince Albert is, my love?
Yeah, I know what a Prince Albert is.
Okay, well, for those of you that don't know, is when you put a piece of metal through your dick and make it difficult to pee, and apparently make it a lot easier to have a boner.
So, I didn't know that.
Yeah, you just have to tug at it or something like that, and it's like insta-boner.
Really, don't you normally just tug at it and you have a boner?
See, that's exactly it. That's my point. I'm like, yeah, just tug at it a little bit more. And don't put a big piece of metal through it.
Seems like a bit of a waste. I have seen a few, though, that are aesthetically pleasing. I will say that. Like Sometimes there's been a couple, not a lot, but that have looked, they look right. They look right.
They look right with a big piece of metal through it.
Yeah.
Something's wrong with you.
I agree.
So you know what? I had a bit of foresight, because the problem is when in our new apartment we have no internet.
Because we just moved in. We've got to call and get the people to call the people and do the things.
And who knows how long that takes? Because you know, internet people that connect you—they're big jerks—and they're like, "Well, we're going to come anywhere between 9 o'clock." And 9 o'clock next year.
If you could just be home all the time, that'd be fantastic.
Yeah, just stay home. And if we miss you, you'll have to wait another year. So yeah, we're essentially waiting for the internet, which is hilarious because after we finish recording the show, we're gonna have to find some internet cafe where I can upload this. And that's probably going to be the way that things work out. I wanted to have the show out Tuesday because I was like, hey, back to regular podcasts. But we were moving that day, and I was just fucking exhausted from... how many hours were we traveling in total in transit?
I think it works out to 24 hours, if you really think about it. Because we got on the bus in Prince Albert, Saskatchewan. My grandparents drove us to the bus station at 6 o'clock. Right? 6 o'clock.
Yeah, roughly.
Right? We waited for the bus. We took a bus into Saskatoon. Then we took a city bus to the train station.
No, we had to take a taxi, remember?
Right.
Because there are no... in this wonderfully designed city of Saskatoon, there are no fucking buses that bring you to a train station. You gotta take a taxi. The taxi that we took to the train station cost more than the train tickets.
Just about. Fucking stupid. Yeah, it was quite a bit.
Yeah.
And then we took a train overnight to Edmonton. We visited with my friends for about 4 hours in Edmonton while we waited for the express bus, Greyhound, to get to Calgary. Now, the reason we did this hop, skip, jump...
Oh, my God, you're right. That is 24 hours. We got it at 6 o'clock the next day.
24 hours. The reason we did this was because a flight to Saskatchewan... and you only get into Saskatoon, and then we still would have had to take the Greyhound to Prince Albert. Because Prince Albert is such a tiny little town, they don't have an airport. You can't fly there. No, you just can't. You have to take a Greyhound.
There's
I think it's tiny enough.
You could fly there and just land on one of the avenues.
You could. You could land on top of one of the McDonald's.
I don't think they have a runway long enough.
Maybe the Walmart.
So yeah, we were traveling. 24
we decided not to fly because it would be $300 apiece. But the way we did it, we nickel and dimed it down, and we got it down to, I think the whole trip, one way, each, was like $100.
No, it's probably a lot more. I love how you underestimate the cost of things. It's a good thing I'm in charge of the finances.
It was about $100.
It was not $100.
Each?
Yeah. It was more.
I don't know. I don't know what things cost. I'm a girl. I'm a pretty girl. I rarely have to buy things for myself.
That's right. You go to a bar and you're like, how come people are always broke when they go to the bars? People just give me drinks. Yeah, they're trying to fuck you. That's why they're giving you drinks. They're trying to have sex with you.
She usually have a bar tab and an entertainer.
Oh, well, that's true. So, yeah, we were traveling 24 hours. And then finally, that same day, we moved in our stuff. What
that
a joke.
Same day. Yeah.
And then today we were busy just trying to get knickknacks that would allow us to actually cook food and things like that. We're in this weird new phase now where we have a place, and this is wonderful. We have nothing. So we begin at the beginning.
You don't even think about the things that you don't have. I'm sure the people listening to this, like, do you realize what it's like to not have anything?
To not have a
drink
spatula.
Water? Yeah. Like, you have to put your hand, cup your hands under the faucet because there is not a single thing you can drink water out of because you don't own anything.
It's silly.
It's not like, oh, I'll just use a bowl. No, there's nothing. There are no things. We don't have bowls. We don't have cups. Nothing.
Well, we've been trying to solve this problem very slowly.
Yeah, today we went to a dollar store and we picked up some stuff.
Yay.
Actually, it was really cheap.
It's a dollar store, actually.
I know,
hope so.
But I'm amazed how much we got.
Yeah, it's amazing. Thank you, China, for all the horrible plastic and shit that you make. And all of the misery that your people face in order for me to have a $2 spatula. I appreciate that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Everything in our house now comes from China. Has traveled across the sea. Do you feel like a piece of shit now?
I feel a bit like a piece of shit.
I feel like a massive piece of shit. And you know what? That's fitting, because today we have a mailbag episode.
Woohoo!
Yay! And that's why I feel like a bit of a piece of shit, because there's so many things I actually wanted to talk about. Without notes, it's not happening. I, in fact... hilariously enough, had to print out the questions on a piece of paper.
Because we don't have internet here.
We don't have internet.
We had to go to a friend's house who has internet so we could use a printer to print out the questions so we could come back to our place so that we... This show's
really ghetto.
It's very ghetto.
Yeah.
If you could see us right now, we are drinking the world's cheapest beer... on lawn chairs.
You know what's funny about this beer? This is a communist beer. This is a co-op beer. This is commie beer. That's what we're drinking. Commie beer in the Texas of Canada.
Yeah, it's co-op gold. I like it. It's good.
It's serviceable. I like it that it's almost a dollar a can. And that's just about the right price. So, first of all, thanks everybody who asked questions, because you're pretty much making the show happen. Although, hopefully... by the time I upload the show, I'm going to be a little bit more prepared for what I'm hoping will be Friday's show, although it might be over the weekend. Like I said, a little bit difficult to get the whole internet thing. We're still just kind of winging it, but we will eventually be back. to Tuesdays and Thursdays, regular schedule. I mean, like, got no choice now. I got to pay the bills, baby.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And again, for the record, yesterday we arrived here at 6 o'clock after literally 24 hours of traveling, of in transit, packed all of our stuff into a car, moved it into an apartment, signed our lease, had 3 hours of sleep, went and got stuff at a dollar store, and now we're doing a show. So forgive any... This will be a silly show,
this
I think.
Is, yeah. Not only is it a silly show, but I almost
we're
feel
gonna
bad.
We're going to be silly.
This is probably going to be the worst show in, like, a number of years. So my apologies, first of all, for how terrible the show is going
to
be.
Let's prime people. Let's prime people to think it's crappy.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're letting you in on the secret.
Then they can be pleasantly surprised when it's mediocre. Okay, we're gonna start with the first question by Raiden, who asks, what views do you guys have on Canada being a monarchy? Jacob is probably a raging anti-monarchist, but what do you think of this institution, and how weird of a concept that a fully independent country has a British person as head of state? I know the historical reasons, but my main problem is that she will never have Canadian interests in her mind. Why do you keep pretending that she is Canadian? Well, okay, that's a multi-phase question, but let me first say that apparently everyone knows who I am, because yes, I am a raging anti-monarchist. I don't like that she's on my money. I don't like the fact that apparently her and her ancestors live forever. I mean, how old was the Queen Mom when she died? 100 or something fucking ridiculous?
Yep.
Yeah, you know what's funny about that, though? Prince Charles will never be King Charles. That's good news, because he's a homeopathic-supporting piece of shit. So I don't want him to ever be a king, because then he'll need to be on my money, and I'm going to probably revolt.
Whoa, are they going to change the money?
Well, if the queen dies, I guess they probably would have to change it to the new king.
Lame. We're going to have Dumbo on our money? That's not good.
He does look ridiculous.
I don't think they're going to be able to fit those ears on a single bill.
That's right. They'll have to have little extensions on the ends.
Little fold-out pieces.
They'll always rip off. But actually, there's a funny story, actually, regarding my views on the monarchy. And I'm not going to say that this changed my views, but when we went to Comic-Con just a couple of weeks ago, there was Patrick Stewart that we went to go see. As some of you may know, he's Captain Picard. And he is Sir Patrick Stewart. He was knighted a number of years ago. And there's actually a person who asked him about his knighthood.
No, that's not true.
Oh, no?
That's not true. What happened... And this is the funny part of the story. So we went to the lecture, Sir Patrick Stewart's lecture, and everybody in the audience was so starstruck that all of the questions they asked him were the shittiest questions.
Horrible.
One of the questions that they asked him was actually, "Hi, I heard that when you were supposed to sign a 6-year contract for Next Generation, you decided that you weren't going to, and then you did. Do you regret
not doing it?
Do you regret hesitating?" And he's like, "But I did do it, idiot." Like, basically...
After that, he stopped taking questions.
He stopped taking questions. So what happened is that Patrick Stewart would hear somebody's question, he would recognize that it was shit, and he would sort of blow it off and answer whatever question he wanted. And all the questions he answered were fantastic. So at one point in his lecture, the sentence he said was... "You know, I realized that when I accepted my knighthood, people would ask me why I accepted the knighthood, considering I don't like the monarchy. And here's my answer."
Uh-huh.
He asked himself the question.
Brilliant. That's what you should
do. Which was great, because we actually, that's the question we would have asked him. Like, why did you accept your knighthood, Mr. Petty?
Especially considering the fact that, like you said, he's very leftist. He actually is also a big proponent of women's rights and things like that. And his explanation was perfect, because
mm-hmm.
At first I was like, "Come on, Patrick, what the fuck?" But his whole thing was that knighthood for actors is, I guess, a little bit different, right? Like, a lot of actors are knighted, and it's a pretty big deal. And for him, I mean, Laurence Olivier and Alec Guinness, you know, all of these guys that were knighted, that were who was the guy that was in Gandhi? Ben Kingsley. Yeah. All of these guys that he just looked up to, and I guess he never really felt that he was on caliber with these individuals. And he had this fantastic story about being just checking his mail and then seeing this letter that was just suddenly from you know, the government. And he's like, uh-oh, what's this? This doesn't make
any
sense.
What I love about his story is that he talks about how he's shooting for this Shakespeare thing, and he's in the crappiest hotel room you've ever seen. And before he left, he went to his house, and he saw that he had all this mail. And so what he decided to do was he put it in a cheap, like, Safeway grocery store shopping bag.
They don't have Safeway in the U.S.
Whatever they in the U.K. Whatever they have, he threw it in there, and he went and to go do this thing. So the letter that he got to be knighted, he received, that he pulled out of a cheap, crappy grocery store bag in the crappiest hotel room ever, and what he said was, I would never forget that terrible, crappy hotel room for the rest of my life, because it's where I received my request for knighthood. And he said, with the letter that's from the Queen that says, we would like to knight you, there's a form you have to fill out.
Which hilarious?
Is hilarious. A form. Very bureaucratic. I love that.
In any case, I guess for him, he viewed it as an honor, not just for himself, but also just for, you know, for all the actors in England who just, that's one of the ways that the greats get recognized. So I felt when he explained it that way, I was less angry about the whole thing, because I know how I would act if all of a sudden I got a letter from the Queen saying, we want to make you a knight. I'd be like, fuck that shit. Do you know what the history of this institution is all about?
But I think for Patrick Stewart, like, part of what he was talking about was that it wasn't just about acting. It was about, he was being knighted for the work he'd done on Next Generation and for all of the stuff he'd done with the Royal Shakespeare Company. And I think he felt like the knighthood wasn't his. It was about
Next Generation. It was the Royal Shakespeare's.
It belonged to all of the people who had ever helped on any of the shows that he had ever been part of. And I get that. Where, you know, to being able to say that one of the cast members was knighted for his acting and they acted in this does credit the original work. So I think for him, he felt like he was accepting it on behalf of everybody he'd worked with.
Now, with that in mind, I'd like to say why I'm, even though I just don't like the Queen, and yes, I'm an anti-monarchist, but I'm anti-everything, really. I'm just a fucking curmudgeon.
You're anti-smile sometimes. I'm not happy.
Yeah.
I refuse to enjoy this fine meal.
But there is a softer side of me that says it's not that bad, and I'll tell you why. Now, while America may have its independence and freedom, it came at a price. People had to pay with their lives. Now, in Canada, we had pretty much a bloodless revolution. Sure, she's our head of state, in name only, I assure you. And in no time will the Queen or the Governor General ever dare to try to take control, because we would collectively lose our fucking minds. Like, I'm sorry, are you stepping in trying to do shit? So, in a sense, like, if you think about our role in the Commonwealth, it carries with it something that is very Canadian, or at least I hope is Canadian.
A very polite nature of just being like, let them pretend that they're still in charge.
Exactly.
Give them a seat or something,
put them on their money. Yeah, whatever. On their $20 bill, that should be
and
good.
And the thing is, the British monarchy does benefit in a lot of ways from having Canada as part of their collective and just letting us do our own shit. Because we rent the English language from them, we paid...
Yeah, as fucked up as that sounds, we do that.
Yeah, and I think like, it's a good system. We do our own shit, they benefit from it too. Everybody benefits
collective. It makes traveling to other Commonwealth countries
it really
a lot
does.
Easier.
It really does. I got waved through at Heathrow much better than I would have if I wasn't a Canadian citizen. The U.S. Yeah. people got a bit more screw nuts.
They got shit.
Well, no. Although I was totally drunk out of my mind at...
You were drunk. Yeah. You were on British Airways just getting, like, endless fucking
Oh, God, I love
booze.
British Airways. My goodness.
It makes being part of the Commonwealth all the better.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay, so next question. Harkonnen asks... Well, he doesn't really ask. He says, Jake, as a fan of the show and site, I would like to say that Penn Jillette and his old radio show first helped me to realize I was an atheist. But it is your show and your work that... you have done that has given me the confidence to come out to my mom and friends and fairly well received. Mom worries about me and my soul, but that's just her being a good mom. Well, thanks, Harkonnen. That's not really a question, but I do appreciate the fact that you said something nice, and I've been told by other people that I have to stop asking you guys not to send fan mail. Because that's stupid. I have to stop being afraid of being thanked. Yeah. Because you know what's going to happen? Next month, I'm going to be doing a lot of interviews. It's going to be my unofficial, sort of atheist appreciation month. And there's a lot of atheists that I feel are underappreciated. One of them is Austin Klein, who writes for atheism.about.com, who I'll be having on the show next month. Now, the thing that about Austin Klein, he's been blogging about atheism since 1997.
Wow.
This guy writes like 100,000 words a month. He's a workhorse, and he has a regular 9-to-5 job.
Wow.
The other day, I noticed I was on his Twitter, which was probably half the size of mine. And I told him, I said, dude, this ain't right. You should have way more followers. You should be asking some of the people in the atheism community to recognize what you've done. Like, you have done shit for the atheism community, and it's time for us to fucking recognize that. And I feel terrible. And plus, when I told him that, he's like, I don't want to really ask anybody. I feel uncomfortable. So I'll be doing the asking for him, because apparently he doesn't want to ask anybody, and that's a fucking giant mistake. So with that in mind, I'm like, I now am accepting your fan mail, which I'll be reading on the show.
In reference to that comment also, I have to say that as a previous and continued fangirl of The Good Atheist, that's my exact story too. I used to listen to the Penn Radio broadcast until, you know, Monkey Tuesday. For anybody who used to watch the show, Monkey Tuesday. Woo, Monkey Tuesday.
I don't even know what that means.
Yeah, those who know, everybody was just like, yeah, Monkey Tuesday. We're all, there's part of a club, you're not invited. And that show was awesome. And he did talk a little bit about atheism. And through that show was actually how I found The Good Atheist. Because I was like, I want to hear more about atheism. And I feel the same way. Was that, like, when I listened to Penn's show, I was like, God, I'm such an atheist. And then I was like, I want to hear more. And then I looked up your show and I'm like, now I'm angry about it. I gotta do stuff.
I channel the angry.
Yeah, you make people want to get up and go, I'm gonna do things.
Well, actually, that leads me to the next question, which will sort of like easily segue. It says, Vlad asks, while I enjoy tremendously, I like that, tremendously, Jacob's rants and no-nonsense language, I sometimes feel that too much in-your-face activism is counterproductive. This is especially true when arguing with someone who is above just plain name-calling or hatefulness. I'm interested to know, do you think it is a good approach to confront intellectually formidable opponents solely with sarcasm and poisoned well techniques? These people might not be the loudest ones, and definitely not the fundies. These are the ones who make up a large yet silent part of the electorate. I know of people who emigrated from my country to U.S. and voted Republican, not because they share their religious views, but because their candidates had more overlapping agenda with them than the Democrats. Therefore, by being overtly offensive to those who do not share your stance of values, but are open to non-offensive conversations, don't you think that alienates them? Sarcasm is only fun when the other person doesn't understand it.
There's a lot of questions in that.
There's a lot of questions, but I'm going to first deal with the first one, which was, well, not really a question, but saying, like, do you think that too much in-your-face activism is counterproductive?
I think that we need all types. I think that some people will always be more responsive to people who are like, yeah, I agree, you're right, but how about this? And questions, you know, the more Socratic method. And I think some people, you know, I think what Jake is here for is Jake's not here to convert anybody. Jake's here to take people who
I'm here to give you confidence in your previous deconversion.
Well, and to say shit the way we all wish we could say it. You know, I mean, I have to be very PC most of the time. You've been around my community in my entertainment.
Yeah, they're a bunch of hippies.
Not all of them, but some of them are pretty hippie-ish, and you know, I have to put up with a lot of like, sure, whatever.
Yeah, I know, you tell me to be nice to them,
too. Be nice, but you know, when I get home, what I want to hear is people with the same point of view as I do, being confident enough to say, that's fucking stupid!
Rah!
That's the stupidest shit I've ever heard. They're fucking idiots. And they're not fucking idiots, but sometimes you need to hear that because it's cathartic. So the reality is that what I would say to that question is that it takes all types. Jake's not here to be in your face to people who are religious. That's not the plan, right? This is more about atheism pride and less about putting other people down. And also, my concern about that question is, you know, are you looking to convert people? Because I don't approve. Do you think that in-your-face activism is the most effective way? I feel like that comment is about, how do I most effectively convert other people to atheism? don't do that. Don't, why are you doing that? Please don't do that. You're going to be really annoying of a person. No, I don't think that in-your-face activism is a good way to convert people. I also don't think that being nice about things is a good way to... I don't think you should convert people at all. I think you should let people do whatever the fuck they want and hope that they'll do the same to you.
Well, I like what you said about needing all types, because the truth is, and I'll rephrase it, is that really when you're on the internet, you're looking for something that resonates.
Absolutely.
I think that people who listen to the show will probably testify saying, like, there was something about the words that you said that felt like they were coming out of my mouth, but I couldn't say them. I know that there's a bunch of people, too, that talk about it, saying, like, yes, yes, say it just like that. Yeah, that's how I wanted to say it, too. And to some degree, I mean, like, it's like the first question saying, or, well, not first question, which was really just sort of like a fan thing, saying, you gave me the confidence to come out. And that is what, that is the entire fucking reason I do this thing. What I want all of you to do is to come out as atheists. I am, unfortunately, the Harvey Milk of atheism. You know, and Harvey Milk, if you ever watch the movie Milk, which I recommend you do, unless you're really sensitive, and then you're going to cry like, you know, a girl. But that's fine. Crying is great. You'll feel better at the end of it. And I think that you'll understand what I do a little bit more at the same time. Because what I want is I want everyone declaring their atheism. And Carissa knows from experience that as soon as someone shies away from it, I get very mad. I get mad because I don't like a person going over and saying, I'm an agnostic. Do you know what I hear when someone says, I'm an agnostic? It's someone who takes pride in the fact that they can go around saying, well, we don't know everything. Therefore, we don't know nothing.
Yeah. Being an agnostic is not really a position. You still need to decide how to live your life. Yes, I'm an agnostic too, technically. I think anybody who believes in science is an agnostic about most things. But how do you live your life every day? Because if you're an agnostic that thinks that there might be a God, you live your life quite differently than an agnostic who's pretty sure there's not one. And I think that you know, yes, you're an agnostic. And you're an agnostic what?
Yeah.
You're an agnostic believer? You're an agnostic atheist? Because you can't just be an agnostic. You can't just live like that. It's like, oh, I'm not sure if things are or they aren't. You wouldn't get out of bed in the morning if you really believe that about everything. You know? Yes. Intellectually, you have to say, we don't know. Because that's a responsible scientific point of view. But
we all want to be responsible, of course.
I mean, there's certain things that you just have to make an assumption about. I assume gravity will be the same today and tomorrow as it was the last 2 days because I need to live in this world.
Well, you know, it's funny that you mentioned assumptions, too, because I remember that I got in a bunch of troubles. For those of you that read the blog and read the Facebook fan page, which I've, you know, and the Twitter, which I hope most of you have been noticing, I have been fucking working like a workhorse to make sure that I'm providing lots of good shit on all three fronts. So go to the website if you want to read some cool stuff. Go to the fan page. And please, guys, like the fan page. Subscribe to the Twitter. These are important things, all right? But nevertheless, I remember a couple of, maybe 2 weeks ago, I put up something in regards to Neil deGrasse Tyson, who gets a lot of love on the atheism scene. But he was on Big Think. And he was mentioning the fact that he doesn't like to, you know, he doesn't like labels. He doesn't consider himself an atheist because he doesn't like what the movement's doing. And he considers himself an agnostic. And Carissa will testify to the fact that I was very mad at this.
Oh my God,
I was
so mad.
So fucking mad. And
oh,
I mean, there
boy.
Were two reasons why I was mad. The first reason is that, number one, I'm like, do you not know about this whole agnosticism is just not really a position thing? And secondly, I'm like, oh, well, I'm so sorry that you don't like the association with atheism. I'm sorry that we're embarrassing you. I'm sorry that you think that if you declare yourself as an atheist, you're suddenly making statements about the world. But that's not fucking true. You know, when I'm an atheist and I look at all the assumptions that I have about the universe, about it, how it functions, I notice that I have one fewer assumptions than religious people have. Religious people have this assumption that there is a God, that this God did shit, and that's why we're around. That's an extra assumption that I just don't need. And when a person fucking calls me arrogant for having one less unprovable assumption, I get mad. I get angry when a person's like, no, I don't want to be associated with that because I don't like the way that the atheism scene is going. Well, you know what, Neil? Who I still like, by the way. But you know what? You can make a big difference in that scene, too. You know? You could be out there. You could be a voice. Maybe you're saying, we don't need to be as angry as Jacob is. Fine, whatever. I'll fucking have an argument with you about that shit. But that's okay. That's fine. But when you go around saying, oh, well, you know, I think that people need to be more scientifically aware. I think that there's a lot of ignorance out there. And then all of a sudden you brush over a huge source of that ignorance in order for you to appear that you appease everyone's stupid fucking ideas, then yeah, I do get upset, because the atheism scene has been sucking his dick for the past 2 years, and to turn around and slap us in the face, yeah, I was a little insulted. But, you know, I like to pride myself of saying that I'm the most passionate of all the atheists. Maybe I should be called the passionate atheist, because honestly, I feel a lot of time...
angry atheist. I think most
of the
time...
No, there is an angry atheist, and he's not really fun. He's just loud and nonsensical.
Sometimes you can be very loud.
I am loud, but at least I have kind of a sense of humor about things.
That's true. That's
yeah.
True.
I mean, sure, I'm loud. I don't always take myself that seriously, and I'm sure that if a person says, Jacob, I really don't believe in any of the things you said... And I will continue to be an agnostic. I'm like, well, I'm going to just keep schooling you for as long as I live. But I will still respect the fact that you're not religious. And I will honestly say that at the end of the day, sure, I mean, I have plenty of agnosticism in myself. I'm still not sure what requirements there would be for me to be able to believe in God. Like, what are the standards of evidence that I could say I am open to that idea? Because as far as I'm concerned, like I said before, this is an extra assumption about the universe that I don't think is necessary. It seems to get along fine without Super Magical Man doing any shit.
Well,
but, you know,
I
might be wrong.
I think what we need to remember about this whole thing is that the proof always lies with the believers, right? Like, the burden of proof.
Yeah.
Right? So to say that it's arrogant to assume that there's no God is bullshit. It's just outright bullshit. Because if you want to believe in a magic man in the sky, and you think other people should as well, then it's your job to prove why. Because it is fucking way more ridiculous than the idea that things just work fine on their own, the way that pretty much all the evidence points to. And you know what? We don't need a god. We don't.
Yeah, you don't need a god to be pushing down on things for gravity to work. Which is what people thought gravity used to work.
You know, and it's that whole God of the Gaps argument, where every time we figure something out, you know, there's less room for God, there's more room for science, and I don't think there's much room for God anymore at all. And it's ridiculous to say, oh, atheists are arrogant for assuming there isn't a God. You need to assume things to live your life. We need to assume a lot of things just to be out there looking for the Higgs boson particle. Do you know how much fucking shit we assume so that we can just look for the Higgs boson particle?
We're assuming dark matter, and we have no fucking proof of that shit yet.
But, like, think about the way that dark matter works, right? We're looking for it, but to be honest, if we don't find shit, then we'll assume it doesn't exist. Because that's how shit works. If you don't find evidence for it, then you assume it doesn't exist. If you can't find evidence for God, you have to assume he doesn't exist. It's not arrogant. It's fucking science. And if you're a scientist, then grow up and stand with your ranks.
Well, you know, it's funny because I wrote an article mistakenly saying that Carl Sagan had been more open about his lack of belief, and he had not.
Hmm.
Although I did put a link to James Randi saying that Carl Sagan was indeed an atheist. Okay, not a fucking agnostic, but a pretty hardcore atheist. But he was afraid to come out at the time because he's like, I'm not going to sell as many books.
Aww.
And you know, the truth is that your future will be limited if you come out. I want everybody to understand that. I mean, limited enough that on the eve of when Neil deGrasse Tyson had said that he was an agnostic and he didn't like what the atheism scene was about, there was a kid in Indonesia who was sentenced to 15 years in jail for writing on Facebook, "There is no God." He developed the courage to say that without realizing the consequences, which he now has to face. And it's easy for me and you to make those declarations when there are no consequences. But in a sense, there are mild ones. Like, my future may be somewhat limited by the fact that I come out. Just like a person who comes out as gay could be fired, could have discrimination, could lose lots of family and friends from him coming out.
But is it better that he lives a lie?
But it's not just about living a lie. It's about the fact that, you know what, you don't really understand the reverberations of even your own confidence in your non-belief. I mean, that kid in Indonesia is part of a really unfortunate time in our history where his confidence was a little bit too early for where he lives. And, you know, part of that is also because over here, we're still regarded as worse than rapists, okay? And because we don't come out, that's just assumed that it's okay. Like, a person who's religious, who has absolutely no idea what a fucking atheist is, could continue to believe that they're evil and horrible and have no morals, even though his fucking partner, his friend, his son, his daughter is a non-believer. You know, that's a pretty fucking rude wake-up call. Think about Dick Cheney. Yeah, Dick Cheney was no longer against gay marriage when he found out that his fucking daughter was gay. He had to evolve that view. And I'll be honest, not everybody will. But the same way that Harvey Milk was pushing for people to be like, you need to come out.
Yep.
Because the future will be determined by that. And that's why I still get mad at every fucking agnostic who doesn't come out. I'm like, the future is relying on you coming out, having some guts. Having some fucking balls and saying, like, maybe my life's not going to be as good. But I'm not just doing this for me. I'm doing it for that kid who's going to be 15 years in jail. Possibly beaten and killed because he doesn't really believe in God. And he couldn't be dishonest about it anymore. There's nothing I can do for him except for have the bravery to fucking face my unbelief here where it's safe. Here where at least the worst that I can fucking have is maybe a lost job opportunity or a lost friend who's shitty anyways. But yeah, that's why I get mad. I get mad when people think they know what the atheism scene is because they've maybe seen a few atheists and they're like, no, atheists are arrogant. Yeah? Atheists are also being fucking jailed, guy. You think that guy in jail's arrogant? No. You know what the last phrase that he said in that article I was reading? He just wants the world to be a better place. That's all he wanted.
Oh, it stings.
Yeah, that really, it should sting. You know, it should sting every time you don't have the courage to come out of your non-belief. You should think about that fucking kid. And every other kid who lives in a country where you just can't even talk about that shit. We need to make a world where they can express themselves. And that's going to start right here. We are the brave ones because we can afford to be brave. They are braver, but they're also facing more risks.
Okay, what was the question again?
Well, he was asking if sarcasm and poisoning the well was a better way to convert. And this leads me to the last point, which is he mentioned also the fact that they're a silent yet fairly large majority. And that's the whole point of it. They're silent. They don't have any fucking say in anything. I don't even want to bother with that.
Yeah, leave them alone. Why are you trying to convert people who aren't messing with anything? Just if these are intelligent people you respect, then respect them enough to leave them the fuck alone. You know, there's nothing wrong with having friends that if they're not pushing their beliefs on you, why would you do that to them? Don't do that. Just don't do that.
All right, let's move on to the next question, which is going to get me equally angry.
Uh-oh.
James asks, what do you think of Alan DeButton and his ideas on what the atheism movement should be doing?
All right, I have an embarrassing thing to admit. I have no fucking clue who that guy is.
Right, well, you don't read newspapers.
I don't.
You don't read the news.
I don't.
What's the last piece of news you read?
I don't know.
Yeah.
News makes me nervous. I like getting my news through The Daily Show and internet.
SourceFed.
And SourceFed. And
I'm shaking my head here.
If the story was interesting, I'll get obsessive and I'll read the whole thing. But honestly, sweetie, there's no point in me looking up the news because whether I like it or not, you're going to tell me everything that's tragic that's happening.
I'm not even telling you the most tragic stuff. I've actually been sort of like, you know, taking it easy on you because every time I tell you about things like, you know, student debt doubling
over
the next few years, you're like, Jacob, you're making me nervous.
You are making me nervous.
I can't even tell you about the real world.
But shit like that's not within my sphere of influence. So there's not really a lot of things I can do about it. And so sometimes it's nice to be a little bit...
Now you wonder where all my bitterness comes from. It comes from sort of like absorbing the news and realizing the world is still a shitty place.
Okay, so I don't know who this guy is. And you know what? I'm going to speak for about probably half the viewership.
Absolutely.
Because I imagine they don't know either. So who the hell is this guy?
He's a philosopher who wrote a book recently.
He's a new philosopher.
No.
He's like a modern philosopher.
Yeah, modern philosopher. Okay. Yeah, he's not that old. Although he is balding. Way more than me, I might add. Anyways.
It's a low blow for no reason, sir.
DeButton has been appearing in a lot of newspapers and articles because his book, I don't remember what the fuck the book is called, but don't read it.
Got it.
Anyways, his book was basically saying, well, you know, the atheist movement has a lot to learn from religion. And then he was saying we should build our own, like, non-believer temples, and we should follow a lot of their examples.
Didn't you think that at some point? Didn't you want to have an unchurch?
Yeah, that was 2007. That, before Good Atheist was called Good Atheist, it was called Unchurch. That was the first website I registered, unchurch.ca, but I didn't do anything with it because, you know, I kind of woke up to the fact that that's stupid.
Why is that stupid?
Well, it's stupid for a few reasons. The first reason is that, you know, part of the thing that we have to do as non-believers is we constantly have to fight this whole atheism is a religion tag.
Yeah.
And that's a really important tag to fight because as ironic as it is for religions to accuse us of doing the same things that they're doing,
mm-hmm.
It's also the truth of the matter is that it is not a religion. All right? There's no less of a homogenous group than non-believers. The truth of the matter is we all have different opinions about things, but the one thing we can agree on is that God is a big bullshit idea that doesn't fucking stand up to scrutiny. And we can agree on that. And that's pretty much what most of us only agree on. Although, we'll be talking about a little bit more about the statistics of who people believe on the next show, where I'll be talking about sort of like, what is it that we don't all kind of generally agree on? But for the most part, yeah, we're fairly unhomogeneous group. And the other reason I think that his whole thing is just a bunch of BS is that if you look at the amount of attention that DeButton's book has gotten, a lot of it has to do with you'll always find people that are sympathetic to any stories which paint religion in a positive light. So because as an atheist he paints religion still in a positive light, he got a lot more media coverage than most other authors who are just like, religion is bullshit. And why is that? Well, it's because it's still very religious people that kind of control this type of media. And they want people on their side. You know, like, think about how many fucking articles have you read from other weak non-believers who are like, oh, the new atheism movement is arrogant and not nice, and we should just work with people instead of, like, debasing them. You know, my whole thing is like, you know what? Bertrand Russell was a non-believer talking about that shit in a really nice way. But that didn't do shit, did it? It wasn't until we started being like, stop, this is enough, we have had it with your shit, that finally things have started to happen. Like, our confidence comes from the fact that we are just sick and tired of this nonsense. Like, when the Catholic Church is berating the Girl Scouts for having a transgender in their midst, we're like, we're sick of that shit, you fucking hypocritical bastards.
Well, and here's the other problem, is that, you know, and I you know what I've noticed in the last probably 6 months? I've had this particular conversation with different people, maybe once every 3 weeks. But I'm constantly reminding people, you know, you walk into a room and you see your friend and they're talking about one of their friends and how, or it's a group of people talking about one of their friends and how that person is very selfish and they don't let things happen and, you know, they're very entitled and blah, 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 blah. They do all these things. And you have to remind that group of people that you allow them to be that way. Mm-hmm. You know, part of the blame rests with you. And as atheists, as part of the global community, we have to recognize that if we've let this, we let it get this bad.
How long have there been atheists? Well, let's just say that Epicurus kind of fucking knocked the winds out of religion, and that was 2,000 years ago.
I think it's we're not being jerks. It's just that when you are pretty confident about the non-existence of something and you're comfortable with it, you're going to make other people feel icky, and that sucks. That doesn't make you a jerk, but to be able to set appropriate boundaries is sort of our job. You know, that's exactly what it is. As atheists, we need to stand up and say, you know what? It's not okay to take money, government money, and not pay taxes.
And spread your fucking nonsense, hateful bullshit.
It's not okay.
And fucking, you know, like, every time a church sponsors or pays money to have advertising campaigns that prevents gays and lesbians from having the same rights as people, am I just supposed to be nice? Am I supposed to say that we should learn something from their example? You know what? We can learn examples from plenty of other institutions that are not built on lies.
I think it's important to recognize that you as an individual are part of a global community, and you as an atheist are part of a really important part of our society. An important part of our society that in the next century is going to probably be pushing against some very inappropriate behavior. And that's exactly how you need to frame it for yourself. What's being done claiming that it's okay for certain citizens to not have the same rights as other people because of the things that they do sexually in the privacy of their own home consensually is stupid. It's inappropriate.
Oh, well,
it's inappropriate behavior, and we need to stomp it out.
Well, like, what do you think, you know, I'm trying to remember if somebody asked me a question regarding drug prohibitionism, because I remember there's somebody, not maybe in our list of questions, but somebody had asked me about it, and I'm like, if you want to know the history of drug prohibitionism, look no further than religion.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? That's a religious thing too, trying to tell people what they can put in their fucking bodies, and the world is more miserable because of it. The world is so much more miserable because of religion. I cannot fucking stress this out.
If you're interested in reading about the way that the religion and prohibition, and about the way that drugs and alcohol and those things are important to human development and to our species, read The Botany of Desire. That is an excellent book. Michael Pollan in that book explains that there are tons and tons of animal species that have some kind of drug and that they do play a role
Elephants
in society.
Elephants eat like peyote. They have like
Absolutely.
A whole fucking like ritual of that shit. They love
That book was so good. But Jake's totally right. I mean, I think that the root cause of a lot of big deal problems that we're dealing with as a modern society can be traced back to religion. And for some reason, when we're tracing back the problem and we see it's religion, sometimes we just sit there and go, well, I guess we can't do anything about it. And that's ridiculous. That's absolutely ridiculous.
Or at least when we're Alan DeBun, we're like, we could certainly learn something. Yeah, we can learn how to fucking rape kids and mask it for 2,000 years.
Yeah, I know. I recognize the desire to see the good in everything because it's important for everybody to get along so that we can all be on the same page. But I think we're at a point here where we're not talking to logical people. We're trying to reason with people who are living in a mass delusion. We need to recognize that we can't just keep playing nice all the time. Not all of us can always play nice and expect things to change.
Especially not me.
It's not going to work. It's just not going to work.
Jacob's not going to be nice. Okay, next question.
To
Nick.
Anyone. Yeah. No matter how much I plead.
I was nice to your family the
you
whole
were
time. And they're
pretty
super
nice
religious.
To my family, to their face.
Yeah.
to
their face. Shut
I'm
up.
Totally kidding. I'm kidding.
Okay, let's move on to the next one. Nick asks, how the hell did the Save TGA campaign turn out anyways?
How did it turn out, Jacob? I actually don't know the answer to this. I am waiting with... What's the term?
Breathless anticipation?
What's that? Bated breath? Is that what it is?
I actually don't know what it is. Because I don't know what you're talking about. But
it's like a thing.
It's a thing. I know what you're talking about.
I read it once.
Now, I really don't want to say whether or not we won. Because there is one last aspect to this whole Save TGA campaign that is yet to happen. Which will hopefully happen now that we're not homeless and we have a...
Hey, we're not homeless!
We're not homeless. I know, baby. The truth is that once I do the Kickstarter program to get the book out, if the book can get the minimum I need to just be published, then we will have saved Good Atheist.
How much is that?
We need $10,000 to do the book, and I'm going to be doing a whole bunch of, like, we're going to be doing campaigning for it. I'm going to be getting on other people's shows.
Okay, so
I'm
going to
be pushing as hard as I can for that last one.
I know you, Jake.
Yeah.
And I'm assuming that you, without knowing at all, that you probably crunched the numbers.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
So what's the percentage of people that would have to donate a certain amount in order for this to work out?
Well, here's a simple thing. Let's pretend you were in a room with four of the people listening to the show. One of you needs to pre-order the book for it to work.
That seems reasonable.
That's it. Considering the hardcore listener base, one in every four has to give me $10.
Just the hardcores.
Yeah, just the people who really listen to it. Like, because there's another 4,000 people who just sort of like come along. They're bored. They just listen to it, but they're not really loyal. They don't give a shit. So I don't need these people.
I think it's doable. I think it's doable.
It's very doable. But you know what? That is kind of like the Save TGA campaign is basically still hinging on that, because it's not just about me needing that money to not only do the promotion for it, because it's a self-published book. That's gonna be tough.
Mm-hmm.
But if we can get 10 grand, that means that I can keep doing this. That the first, like, the Bible Stories is volume one, which means it's the Old Testament. Now, if we get enough pre-orders for that one, you know that after this one gets published, the second part of it, which will be the New Testament, which is probably the more important one, but, you know, you got to start. You got to crawl before you walk. That one will be the most important one. The one that will actually require probably more time, because I'm assuming that by the first part will take probably less than a year. I'm hoping about 9 months by the time I'm finished from the moment where the Kickstarter campaign finishes, which in my mind is the end of June, is when I'm like, that's the deadline that I have in my brain for when we know. So that's when you'll know if the Save Good Atheist campaign is successful. But of course, when it's up, you can go on, you can pre-order the fucking book, $10, and that's it. And I'm pretty sure that we can do this because, you know, by the time it's done too, I'm going to have some pretty cool promotional material and a couple of pages of preview for the book. So if no one's excited from that, then we will have failed. And the Save TGA campaign will be no good. But like I said, one out of every four of you needs to just...
But it's not just about pre-orders, right? I mean, you're going to have other things.
Oh, yeah, there's going to be some cool stuff. Like, for instance, there will be 12 slots available for people who can pay more and get their faces drawn in the illustrations for some of the different books.
Oh, right, because you're doing the whole book with all those really amazing illustrations. So they're going to send you a couple pictures of them, and then you're going to, wow, that's cool.
And plus, there's going to be like, I think 5 or 6 of those will be people who, you know, pay even still a little bit more, but who get the original prints of it as well. So there'll be some cool stuff. And then maybe one slot, I haven't quite decided, for the person who's going to get the big cover that I drew.
It's pretty nice.
And which is quite huge. And it will be signed by me, and probably I will show up to give it to you in person unless you're not in North America. And then I don't think I'll be able to afford it. But
or at least he'll like talk to you on the phone.
Yeah, I'll give you
a
nice
We'll figure something out.
Yeah, we'll figure out. There will be different price points for stuff, like, because there'll be the $10 is the ebook version. There'll be like probably about a $60 for a signed physical copy along with the audiobook and the ebook, because anybody who buys the physical copy, as far as I'm concerned, gets the ebook as well. I don't like this whole having to buy things separately. If you fucking pay for the physical book, you should have the ebook copy. You bought the rights to the book, as far as I'm concerned. But yeah, so there's going to be lots of different things. So if some of those come through, we don't even need one on every 4. Probably need one on every 6. It's highly doable, guys. I pretty much planned it that the book is what's going to save not only Good Atheist, but also, I think, put me on the map.
Plus, it'll force you to write the stupid book you've been teasing everybody about for 4 years.
You know, I still get email about that from people.
And rightly so.
Yeah. They give me shit. But I am working on that book.
Yeah, and I think this is going to work really well, because you seem to, you know, the pressure of your audience. Like, look at our situation.
Honest.
Look at our situation right now. We have no furniture. We're in an empty room but the first thing we set up was the mics. We're on 3 hours of sleep, and we're doing a show because you have to. You love your fans so much that we.
So I need to give them content. It's been a month. I'm like, are you guys like seriously? Because I mean, I always call it crack. I mean, like, how much withdrawal have you guys gone through? Like, are you okay? Are you having the shakes? We're back, baby. We're back. We're in a place permanently, so you're going to get your fix again, folks. All right, let's move on to the next question. Percy asks, who is the next Christopher Hitchens or Richard Dawkins or Carl Sagan? It seems the atheist scene, except this site, is full of a lot of older people. Reddit has a huge atheism following, but it's more of the, hey, let's make funny atheist shit out of this photo scene. I guess you've been trolling on Reddit.
Yep.
Back in 2006, when everyone around me was coming out as an atheist, I was pretty stoked. My deconversion was taken lightly. I struggled over whether there is a fucking teapot orbiting around Jupiter or not. I finally decided there wasn't, and if there was, I didn't want to live with it for all eternity. My atheism cherry was broken when I read Dawkins, Hitchens, Harris, and the like. Most people don't know who they are, though. I am lost here, and it is because I'm from the South. I wish I could talk to people about shit I've read, but no one gives a shit about. They just agree that shit is fucked up. He's been using shit a lot. It's frustrating trying to get an intelligent conversation sometimes. So who is the next Christopher Hitchens? Well, you know, going back to this
Tim
whole thing...
Tim Mitchin in his old age.
Well,
I think maybe he'd start writing. That's my fantasy. My fantasy is like, well, I don't want him to stop making music because I adore him. But my fantasy is like, he sits down, he starts writing, and he's just as good as Christopher Hitchens. I would welcome...
That is a fantasy.
Tim Mitchin, I know. But that's who I'm going to pretend, because I want it badly.
Okay, well, Chris has one vote for Tim Mitchin. I will say that I actually don't know. I have been looking at people who could be the next Christopher Hitchens. And I'll be honest with you, there was a long time I thought maybe I could lift that mantle. But I'm not a debater. I don't really do the debate thing. And, you know, a huge part of what Hitchens did was that. So I think that actually the next Hitchens has to come out of, you know, the intelligentsia. Like, I realize more and more now that I am common man atheism, and that's, I'm fine with that. I think that actually is probably more useful in the long run. But yeah, we need an intellectual
You're the daily show of atheism.
That, I guess so. I'll take that. But there has to be someone who's not just passionate about debate, but who is vitriolic about it. Like the same way that I was saying that I don't want to be nice. You can't, if you're going to be nice, you can't be the next Christopher Hitchens. He took no prisoners. All right. Mm-hmm. It was none of this Alan DeButton bullshit that we can learn things from religion. What was the title of his book? Religion Poisons Everything? I think we have our answer here. We need a polemicist. Someone who wants to be in a good fight. And you know what? Truth be told, I hope it's one of you guys that listens
to
the show.
Cool.
It would be cool.
Wow.
But the truth is, like, look at Hitchens' life.
That'd be so cool.
Think about his life. When he was my age, do you know what he was doing? He was an idiot idealist in Cuba who gave away his passport when he went there because he's like, I'm going to take part in this socialist revolution. Yeah. He matured. He grew up. He became an adult. And he became an awesome one. But, you know, Hitchens was really at the peak of his intellectual power in his 50s. This is when he really sort of came into his own. Because during his young age, he was just a party drinker, fucking moron, like most of you listening to the show. But it doesn't mean that as you grow and mature, you can't become fucking amazing. You can! It's just that you have to be so devoted to it that you feel that spending the rest of your life learning that, of doing the tough work of being the next Hitchens, sounds like a pleasure to you. That you just think, yeah, I could write a whole bunch of books about it. That every time I say something about religion, I feel like there was something that I left out, something that I did not understand, that I need to go back and research and be, you know, fucking hardcore about it. Well, the truth is, we don't have these guys yet. They have the new generation of it hasn't stepped up. Now, while the atheism scene has lots of people that are, you know, sort of like becoming, you know, like doing plenty of conferences and things like that, I just don't smell it on them. It's still just a bunch of egghead geeks that don't they don't inspire me.
We're a pretty nerdy scene, aren't we?
Very nerdy scene.
Pretty nerdy. That's the one. There are very few things I feel like all atheists have in common, and I think a majority of atheists are pretty geeky.
Pretty geeky, very socially inept. This is a general trend that we have.
Not all, but quite a few. Yeah. I wonder why that is.
Well, there's probably a few reasons. I mean, the first reason is I have to imagine that there's a lot of atheists who are atheists because they were never believers. And if they come from a background where other people are believers, they probably never really fit into those groups. And therefore, when you're not fitting into groups and you're feeling that that divide, well, the truth of the matter is that you may not really be as socially skillful as
but it's cool because we're geeks too. We're part of that.
Yeah, I'm a pretty fucking massive geek. I mean, how many shows have I talked about the most fucking geeky shit?
I think 10 minutes of the show was about Star Trek. It was about Sir Patrick Stewart.
Yeah,
so
probably about that.
Hey, that didn't give us away.
Do you think that they can hear the shitty fucking bells coming from the Calgary Tower right now? That
I really hope
me?
Not. I really no. hope not.
You know what I hate the most about these bells? They're shitty sounding. They sound
are.
Like they're from the fucking 80s. Like, guys,
I wonder if
new
I can
speaker time.
Write a petition and get everybody in the buildings around here to sign it and just be like, stop it with the bells. You're not make. Nobody can, wants the bells.
You know, maybe we should just do a Calgary-wide thing. Like, does anybody care about the fucking bells ringing?
Get rid of the bells.
Get rid of the bells.
Get rid of the bells.
Get rid of the bells. Like, I want to be part of this whole thing.
But we're going to do it.
You know why the bells rang? Because we gave ourselves an hour, and we've now surpassed that, and the bells are fucking on. And it's going to be like that for the next 8 months.
Oh, God.
I apologize now if you
Let
guys
us
can
know
hear
if
that.
You can hear it.
Yeah, please do. But it is annoying and distracting to me, and I fucking hate it. All right, let's move on to the last question. We got one more question. This one's tough. This was actually asked to you, Carissa. Directly, because you posted this on your fan page.
It was probably asked to both of us. It was just on my fan page.
Okay, well, the question is,
hey, join my fan page. I have a fan page.
Yeah, you should join our fan page. Okay, Reed asks, Does the growth of Islam in Canada trouble you much? Also, should parents be permitted in using religion to lie to their children about the natural world? Example, a Muslim parent refuses to allow his daughter to explore the reality of evolution and instead permits only a belief in Allah as the cause for the diversity of species, the geological column, and all the other wonders of the natural world. Said in another way, should we allow our fellow citizens in Calgary to poison their minds, the minds of their children? Okay, well, I guess it's a Calgary-based question.
And I also think this is a good question because I'm pretty sure you and I are on different sides of this argument.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Okay, well, where does your side come from?
My side comes from the position of an educator, right? So, as I'm sure I've said 1,000 freaking times, I used to be an educator. And I still consider myself part of the ranks because, you know, you never really leave it. And I feel like the way you have to allow the family needs to be the most important unit.
Sure.
In order for, I think, a society to be properly functional. So I think part of the problem is that I worry that if we allow governments to regulate what you are and aren't allowed to teach your child privately, to the point where you're saying, well, you have to teach them religion, or you have to teach them evolution, or you have to teach them this. That's very concerning to me. Because that's what's happening within the home. And first of all, if we try and regulate that from a government point of view, it's not going to work. Because you can't really do it. You know, they're going to teach their kids whatever they want to begin with. So whenever you try and regulate something that's almost impossible to regulate, you end up with more problems than you have solutions. And the other problem is that we need to allow parents to make decisions for themselves. And what happens when, let's say we create a provision where we say, you know, we can label teaching a child about religion as child abuse. Well, let's say we get a change of government and that provision can now easily be used to say, well, now you're not allowed to teach them whatever the hell they want, right? Where do we draw the line if we are deciding as a society what it is appropriate to teach children? I think it's important to have a school system where we have things that we've all agreed on to teach children that we think are appropriate, and that we can fight, different sides can fight, and we can have intellectual conversation about whether or not that's good or not. But parents should still have the right to say, I don't want my kid taking this class, I want them to be idiots, because they only have that right until that child turns 18, now they're a grown-up, now they can do whatever.
I just find it kind of strange that you of all people tells me that family is the most important institution for a person to be educated. Because I don't buy that from you.
I'm not saying that family is the most important institution for a child to be educated. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that in order for society to be functional, we need to allow families to be the most important and highest authority in personal decision making.
Okay.
It needs to go individual and then family. And I don't think that... I think that's part of the problem. Like, think about the problem we're having now with gay marriage. It's because governments are trying to regulate who's allowed to fuck and marry who, and that's bullshit. And I also feel equally icky, even though I wish parents wouldn't indoctrinate their children into religion. I wish that wouldn't happen. I don't think it's the government's responsibility to step in and say, you're not allowed to do that. I think that it's our job as a society to shame those people, and I think that it's wrong, but it's not okay to legislate against it.
Let's go back to this whole sort of, like, let's use gay marriage as a perfect example, actually. Okay, so let's pretend that in your religion, not only are you against gay marriage, but you actually, your religion tells you that they're an abomination that should be killed. Or use a different example, like in Germany, where every year, I think it's like something like 50 or even more than, like 100 young women are being... circumcised.
But we're not talking about that. We're talking about pulling your child out of science class.
But that's exactly what religious parents are trying to do, pulling their children out of these science classes in order to shield them from, you know, evolution or from anything that contradicts their religion. Now, my whole thing is, my first problem, number one, is that family is not the primary way in which a child's development comes from. Like, it's their environment, it is their friends, their peers. This will have a much more profound impact than their fucking family.
Absolutely.
So I'm not really, you know, I'm oftentimes not too worried about that kind of dynamic where at least these children are actually taking part in society, they're going to school and that kind of stuff. Because I'm like, look, society will win out, right? This view that, like, oh, your parents are going to try to, you know, teach you these values. As soon as these values start to really conflict with reality that you've been introduced properly, then they really won't live up to scrutiny. But
especially
the problem,
if we have enough atheists or at least smart people out there that are have the confidence to feel that it's okay to publicly shame people when they do things like that. Like if someone, and I don't care what religion, I don't care what fucking religion they are, but if you're sitting around and they say something inappropriate about gay people or gay marriage or whatever, and you do not laugh at them or somehow shame them socially, you're not doing your job.
So, but here's the thing. I'm very much against the way that private schools operate in Canada and the U.S. The way that just someone can just, these schools can teach literal nonsense and get away with that. I have a giant problem with that. I'm like, look, if you want to just teach them something and they have no degree whatsoever, I'm cool with that. But if you want to just be accredited, then no. You cannot teach nonsense. I have a huge problem when all of a sudden we're kind of giving this laissez-faire attitude towards schools.
So what is your alternative?
And it's worse in fucking the UK, where religious schools are teaching in science class, they're teaching the stuff from the Quran where it's like fresh water and salt water can't mix.
Fine, then what is your alternative? Do you think that the government should be regulating what we learn?
I think there should be a
very minimum.
Because
that sounds like 1964.
No, it does not. Did you go to public school? You consider that 1984 that they had a fucking that they had a curriculum that said you needed to pass these fucking exams in order to be able to graduate? That is not 1984.
Yeah, but I could have chosen not to go to that school.
Yeah,
I could
fine.
Have decided not to graduate.
You can choose to stay home and learn nonsense. And of course, I'm not going to fight anyone who doesn't want to learn anything.
That's
cool. But as soon as you are a school, yes, you should be mandated. Yes. You are not allowed to teach fucking nonsense. And I don't care that you are not paying one fucking... That even if it was a situation where not 1 cent was coming from the public sector, I don't care.
If it's totally
private...
You
are not allowed to have a fucking accreditation at all from the government if you are teaching nonsense.
I totally disagree.
Well, you know
what?
That's because you're a libertarian shithole.
If it's a 100% private school that the government is not supporting...
Right, but that doesn't
even exist. They should have the right to do whatever... To teach whatever the fuck they want.
Not as a school. They can have a club. They can call themselves the Unlearned Club. They can even sort of say we're a religion, because that's what it is. It's not a school. If you put the word school next to it, then I'm sorry, you have to reach a certain fucking minimum, because you know how stupid people are. If you put school at the end of anything, people will buy into it. All right? And that's the problem. I mean, think about all these faith schools in the UK. They are teaching garbage nonsense. But because they have the word school, and because they are being funded by the government, they're allowed to teach nonsense to people. And what can we do about it, right? We have to fight it from the very fucking get-go.
I think what
and
we can do...
What a tough fight as soon as we're like, oh, well, you're private. You can do what you want. No. No. You cannot. If you're going to call yourself a school.
We can fight it in the way that we can lobby our government to say we don't want our tax money going to teaching nonsense to children. But I don't want to be paying for the indoctrination of youth against
science. We do that all the time.
Science.
It's like every single church that does not pay tax falls into that category.
I know. And I think we should all be standing up against that and being upset. But I don't think that it's appropriate for a government to disallow anybody to teach anybody anything.
No, I'm not disallowing anybody. I'm just saying you're not allowed to call yourself a school, and you're not allowed to give out diplomas. It's as simple as that.
You can
hand out little certificates of, you know, like the same way you're like, oh, you got your confirmation. They give you a certificate because it's just as garbage.
No, it's arguing over details. You're pretending that if you take away some word that has magical power and you take away diplomas.
You don't think that the word school has a fucking magical power?
I don't think it has magical powers.
I will fucking take you to task on that. Because I could find a fucking study that as soon as you put the word school at the end of something, someone will take it more seriously.
I challenge you to find.
I don't have the internet, so I can't do it.
I challenge you when you have the internet to find a study that says it's significantly changes.
Even if it was a mild
effect. Oh, there we go.
No, but...
Back
even if it was a mild
city.
One. No, I would still be against it.
Uh-huh.
I would still be against it. You call yourself a school? To some degree or another, there is some element of taxpayer monies that's going into that. There is no fucking private school that is 100% private. None of them.
Yeah, I totally disagree with tax money going towards teaching people nonsense. That part I totally disagree with. But I think it's stupid to say that the government can legislate against what people can and can't learn. That's stupid. Or whether or not they can use the word school.
It's a fucking standardized test. Look, if you can't answer the very, very basic questions of evolution, fail. You don't get to graduate.
Oh, yeah.
That's a pretty... That's mandated. Oh, my God, it's 1984, darling.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm
saying... That's exactly what I'm talking about.
No, because you can choose not to graduate, right? If you don't want to be part of the system, you don't have to be part of the system. But to say that we should legislate against... That, then not, then people who... People don't get to opt out. Everybody needs the option to opt out.
They do have the option to opt out. They call themselves a non-school. They can be a little... unlearned institution.
Agree to disagree.
All right.
Because otherwise, the chimes will go off again. It'll be another hour.
You know what? I could hear them in my ear. It's going to be awful. This fucking chimes.
I'm sorry, guys. We're going to sign up. We're going to get put together a petition and get...
Well, we're no longer going to be recording bills. Right after 5 o'clock because they have a 5-minute chime. Can you believe that? I timed it. 5 minutes of nonsense music.
Wow.
It's so bad. It's not even cool music. It's just horrible, chimey, like... churchy fucking bells that we have to listen to.
I do love that when we look out the window, we can see the Calvary Tower.
At night, it's look pretty cool
looking.
It's
pretty nice.
Yeah.
Our view's really nice.
It is nice, but we are also so close to a very loud train.
So loud.
So we were actually underestimating. We're like, oh, we've been near trains. But for some weird reason, the trains are extra loud here. I don't know what it is.
Yeah, we're going to have to find like a way we can build a soundproofing over the window or something.
I don't think it's possible. But here's the good news, folks. Once we actually have furniture in several months, then probably the noise factor of the chiming will go down. I want to apologize again for the chiming. It was distracting and it made me very angry. I hope it didn't make you angry, because it made me very angry. But I'm an angry man. So.
Awesome. Do you want to say something else or promote anything else before we go? Because I think we should go because we need to
We need to go post up the show
and
do lots of things on the internet. So we're going to wrap it up. It's a much longer show than I thought. But, you know, thanks everybody for your questions. You know what we're going to be doing soon? We're also going to be having an 800 number because I'd rather people phone in their questions that I could sort of add in the show. How cool would that be?
Great.
It would not be live, but you would call in, you would leave a message and be like, hey, Jacob, blah, 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 blah. And how cool would it be to hear your own voice rather than just sort of hear me read it out loud?
Let's do that.
As soon as we get our phone set up, we're going to try to see if we can get a 1-800 number. And I want you guys to still sort of like be pretty pumped up about the Kickstarter account for the book, right? I want you to be primed. This is going to happen, and I need you guys to participate. You are my saving grace. If you want to really save TGA, it will be all about buying the book. But I'm going to make sure that the book is going to be all kinds of awesome. All right, it's going to be there's going to be lots of different sections. The first section is going to be just raw history of each book. Then it's going to be the stories themselves. And at the end of it, I'm also going to probably provide a bit of a companion, like because I wanted to include like all the different types of religion, or just a really short description of it. Like, what is a, you know, what's the difference between a Baptist and a Calvinist and that kind of stuff? You know, like one paragraph, like a very easy guide to the various sects that have at one time used the Bible as a justification for their nonsense.
Nice.
So I really wanted to make it the fundamental tome that you can just hand someone and assume that they tell you, well, the Bible tells me so. Okay, well, why don't you just sort of like read this book, then you'll figure out where it comes from. You'll get to hear the stories in their full graphic detail, the way that they used to be very graphic. You know, like the story of Onan when he spills his seed on the ground. You know, when you say seed, it's really jizz, okay? He spilled his jizz on the ground. Just because you say seed... make it more polite. Doesn't mean it's less gross.
It's also like not spilled. It's not like he was like, whoa, whoa, whoa. He fucking masturbated onto the floor. That's what really happened.
Well, he basically coitus interruptus.
Right,
on the
fucking
ground. And but you know what? Like when you can just hide it in ancient language, sometimes it loses a little bit of its reality. And I'm bringing the reality back, people. I'm putting it into Jake speak. And you know you want it. You know you want that book in your fucking library. So be primed, people.
Right.
The book is going to come out very important for the Save Good Atheist campaign.
Remember to follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, and there's also a YouTube channel that Jake put together that has like two videos
I'm gonna be
that
putting
are good,
up
actually.
More. Yeah, well, I have to finish the Moses story part of it, which I still want to do before I actually release the... you know, like the book itself. Because I think actually I could use that as promotional material to be like, hey, this is a small preview of when I just did a show about it. Of course, it's going to be a lot tighter and a lot better on the book.
Nice.
But this, you know, watch the video. And if you chuckled a few times, then why wouldn't you buy the book, fool? Foo? All right. Before we go, a reminder. Thank you, everybody who is a hardcore member. You guys are the sole reason we're still around and why the Save Good Atheism... Good Atheist campaign is happening. Thank you for that whole month where you guys continued to support me.
And everybody who already bought the advanced.
Yes, you guys were also a big reason why we actually have an apartment. Like the pre-sales went solely to securing an apartment so that we could no longer be homeless. So it's thanks to you guys.
Thank you, honestly.
So we thank you deeply. And if you love the show and you want to be a member, there is the $20 version, though of course the hardcore version is a lot more appreciated. But I'm not going to push that too hard on you. You'll become addicted enough that you will eventually give me all your money. Okay, with that, my name is Jacob Forte.
And I'm Krista Hendricks.
Have a good Atheist Day, everybody. Okay, I think that are we fairly warmed up after 8 minutes of nonsense? How you feeling?
I will survive.
I will survive. For as long as I know how to love, I know I'll stay alive.
Do the intro. Just do it. Just do it!
Shut up. You need to give me like 30 seconds. Fucking Brett. All right, here we go.
Just do it!
You're in trouble. Shut up now!